Let's open our Bibles to the book of Revelation chapter 3, and let's talk about a lukewarm faith. Let's talk about faith without follow-through. Now, we did brand this series Retweet because these letters that Jesus wrote, they read a lot like modern-day tweets. They're short, they're candid, they're out in the open for everybody to see. And we called it Retweet because we thought what Jesus said so long ago deserves to be heard again. Let's retweet this. Let's reconsider Jesus' message to these churches. I think what we've found is each of these have been like on point. Like they're fresh. He could have written them this morning. They're just so fresh and alive to us. And we've had a little fun to say, okay, let's imagine he was tweeting this message. How would the limited amount of space that you're afforded on Twitter to send a message, how would that impact what Jesus wrote? So we've kind of imagined some tweets. So here's the last one of these tweets for us. If Jesus were tweeting at Laodicea, he may say, "You are stagnasty. I wish you were on fire or even stone cold dead. At least then you'd know the truth about yourself. But you are smack dab dull. And you tripping. You say winning, but you're not even in the game. Play it. Come on. Let's try this again." All right? Now, here's what he really wrote, verse 14. "Write this to the angel, to the pastor, to the spokesman of the church in Laodicea." Now, each week we have taken a few moments to just recognize some facts about each of these communities, because the fact is they have had an impact on the churches, and they certainly affect the way Jesus communicates with these churches. So here's some facts to know about Laodicea. We'll put our map up that we've used each week. You'll notice that there is a green circle with a purple dot that's giving your eye a place to draw and locate Laodicea on the map. You can tell it's the furthest south and it's east. Now, the main thing on the map that I want you to notice is there is a straight line that goes from, as you're looking at it, from the right to the left. It goes from Laodicea over to Ephesus. That Rome road was built by the Roman Empire. Beforehand, if you wanted to travel from the coast and get to Laodicea, you had to go up and over. And so the Romans built this expressway that made everything that was available on the coast of Ephesus now available quickly to the people in Laodicea, which meant that it now provided goods and services inland that previously had not been available. Because by the time somebody would start at Ephesus and go all the way around to Laodicea, they'd be out of stuff. So now there's lots of stuff provided. And so there was a very large, famous market that was built in Laodicea, bringing all of these things from the coast inland. Laodicea was also known as a banking center. It had a gold depository in the city. If I say Fort Knox, you automatically think gold. If you were to say Laodicea in the ancient days, people would go, "Oh yeah, that's where they keep gold." It had a big gold depository. They were also known as a big clothing manufacturing center. In particular, like upscale clothing. Now, it's hard to imagine like the ancient world having that whole kind of dynamic, but they did. They had their Gucci. They had their brands. And so people came to Laodicea to get really upscale clothing. So they had a fashion district. They also were known for having a medical school that specialized in ophthalmology, the study and care of the human eye. They even manufactured in the city an ointment, a cream that went on eyes for eye irritations that was exported all over the world. Now, for all of those reasons, the economy in Laodicea was great. It was a wealthy city. In fact, it was the wealthiest city in that entire region. So wealthy that when an earthquake happened that destroyed part of the city, the imperial treasury offered to help them rebuild the city, and the city of Laodicea said, no, we're good. We'll pay for it ourselves. Can you imagine like New Orleans refusing federal help for rebuilding after Katrina? They were like, no, we got enough. We're good. They were very, very wealthy. But for all of their wealth, they could not buy their way out of a bad water supply. The springs, the natural springs in the city of Laodicea oozed to the surface. They didn't bubble. They oozed to the surface. And as they surfaced, they gathered in a pool of slimy bacteria-infested water that not even animals wanted to drink. And so in order to try to get water to their city, we're going to put another map up. And this map kind of gives us a little bit of a bigger picture. The purple dot again is Laodicea. To the north, Hierapolis, they had hot springs. And so below them in Colossae, they had cool springs. And so they spent a lot of money to build these very large aqueducts to carry water from each of those locations to deliver water into their city. But the problem was the journey of the water was so far that by the time those hot springs got to Laodicea, the water was just tepid. It was just lukewarm. And the cold springs, by the time they got there, same deal. They were just tepid, lukewarm. Warm water. The medical school used a term in Laodicea to describe the water that we still use today in emetic, which means a vomiting agent. So the water of Laodicea was known as inducing vomiting. Now, to that city, in that church, Jesus introduces himself. He says, this is the message from the one who is the Amen, the faithful, and the true witness. When you align Amen, faithful, and true, all of them have some like message of reliability and truthfulness. When someone says, Amen, I agree with that. I think that's true. Faithful, reliable, true, accurate. All three of those things stack together to give us like a powerful statement that Jesus is introducing himself in a way to say, I am a truth teller. And what I'm about to say to you is legit. This is the absolute truth. The next part of his introduction establishes Jesus not only as a truth teller, but he's also, as it says, the beginning of God's new creation. Now, the word beginning does not mean like rank in order, like it's the first in a list of things. Beginning refers to source. That's why some translations will say originator. He is the source of God's new creation. Now, the first thing that that indicates to us is if we are going to be made right with God, none of us are righteous, and we can't possibly do things to make us right before God. We have to have a source to make us right. And so Jesus is the source of God's new creation. Jesus comes into our sinfulness and he recreates us a brand new creation who is forgiven and is now in alignment and right with God. So Jesus is the source of our salvation. It's part of what's meant. The second part of this, which is more kind of in view in light of the context of the passage, is not only does Jesus make us right with God, watch this, he is our soul-sustaining force for life. Meaning, sometimes we sing a song, Good, Good Father, where we acknowledge God's faithfulness and God's devotion and his provision in our life. When Jesus describes himself as a source, he's the one who brings us in alignment with God, but he also brings God's favor and God's blessing and God's provision into our life. He is our source. Now, this particular word was used across the Roman Empire as citizens of Rome were taught to look to Caesar as your source. And so here Paul captures that same term and says, Caesar is not the source. Jesus is our sustaining source for life. If you are employed, you get a paycheck from your employer. And if you're not careful, you will look at your employer as your source. Now, we're grateful for our job. We're grateful for our paycheck. But you better know there is a source bigger than the person who signs your check. Jesus is our source. That's what he's saying in this introduction. He's the only one who is sufficient for all the needs that we have. Now, he breaks the letter pattern that we've come to expect. When we have studied these letters, there's always somebody that's addressed in the letter. There's Jesus' introduction. Typically, there is a compliment followed by a correction. In this letter, Jesus does not offer a compliment. He just cuts right to the chase. And he's going to put it in user-friendly terms. Look at verse 15. I know all the things that you do. I've got my eye on you. I see everything that you do. That you are neither hot nor cold. I wish that you were one or the other. But since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. So Jesus' complaint about the way they are living out their faith is a reminder to their water system. Neither hot nor cold, tepid, lukewarm, and the consequence is I want to spew you out of my mouth. You make me nauseous. Now, to spew you out is not a gentle like, ooh. The word literally means violent puking, heaving. I am notorious in my family for being a violent puker. If you ask my kids two or three things, tell me two or three things about your dad, I guarantee you one thing, that he's the most violent puker I've ever seen. Because I resist puking at all costs. And I will wait until like it's right here, and then I will break and run, and then I begin to vomit. And when I vomit, every part of my being is just, my toes are shaking, just all of me. I'm a violent puker. That's the word here. And Jesus says a mediocre, lukewarm life isn't like just, it makes God sick. There's a violent kind of reaction to that kind of complacent approach to faith. Now, I want you to look again at just the startling nature of what Jesus says to them. I wish you were hot, but if not, I wish you were cold. I mean, that's like a wow. Because what he says is, I really want you to be hot. I want you to be all in. But if you're not all in, I'd rather you be all out. Can I say that again? Jesus said, I want you to be all in. That's where I want you to be. I want you to be hot all in. But if you're not all in, I'd rather you be all out. In the most kind of dangerous, worst place to be in our faith practice is in this lukewarm seat. Pastor and author John MacArthur has written this about the danger of lukewarmness. He says, they, meaning the Laodiceans, were not cold enough to feel the void of their sin. They remained satisfied. Consequently, there is no one further from the truth or harder to reach than the person who thinks I'm okay. I mean, being hot for God, I mean, that's awesome. We've all had moments where our life is just, man, we are hot for God. Our faith is burning. Our commitment is right. We've had those moments. And Jesus said, that's where I want you to be. There's also a benefit in being like cold because you know I'm not where I need to be. I know I'm far away from God. I know things aren't right between us. There's a benefit to being hot. There's even a benefit to being cold. But the danger place is in the middle, in the lukewarm seat. Now, if you've ever been to SeaWorld, you know that when you go to SeaWorld, there's like a dangerous seat to be in, right? It's the splash zone. And they even warn you, like, don't sit here unless you want to get wet. This is the splash zone. It comes with a warning. This is a dangerous seat. Jesus here is warning us that lukewarm is a dangerous seat because it's in the puke zone. I might just puke you out of my mouth. He continues his complaint in verse 17. You say, I am rich. I have everything I want. I don't need a thing. Now, because there's no mention of persecution in the city, it's reasonable for us to believe that these Laodicean Christians participated in the good economy of Laodicea, and they were doing well. In fact, archaeologists have discovered in Laodicea not one, not two, but three church buildings, which make it not only like some of the first church buildings ever built in the world, but it's the first city to ever have multiple buildings. So these folks are doing well. And yet Jesus goes on to say, and you don't realize that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Now, because the city was so wealthy, it attracted a lot of beggars. So if you were poor and needy in the region, where would you go? You would go to Laodicea because people there have a lot. And so you would go looking for help and handouts. And the locals in Laodicea put a label on people like that. They called them wretches. They're just wretches. Come up in here begging for things. They're ill-clothed. Some of them don't see straight. They're wretches. And so Jesus kind of has this table-turning moment where he says, you know, the way that you see the locals, that's how I see you. That would have got their attention. Like, he's calling us wretches. Now, let's be clear here. Calling lukewarm Christian wretches, that doesn't mean they're bad people. That doesn't mean that they are thugs or deplorables. Usually, lukewarm Christians are moral. They are family-centered. They go to church regularly. They get their news on Fox. But their approach to the Christian life is lukewarm. It's complacent. It's mediocre. A lot of talk. There's no walk. We're about to step into the back to school season. If you have smaller children, putting them in school, there's a lot of, you know, immunization records that have to be produced. And I know that has a controversy all to itself, but immunizations, shots. You know what those are? It's where, you know, a doctor intentionally gives you just a little bit of a virus. And because you host in your body a little bit of a virus, when you get exposed to a fuller strand, your body reacts this way. Oh, we've already got that. We don't need that. And it rejects the virus. And some of the challenges that we face with a mediocre, lukewarm life is all of us have gotten just a little bit of Jesus, a little bit of Bible, a little bit of church, a little bit of spirituality, maybe just enough to cause us to reject a full-blown life of having a Christ-centered, devoted life. Lukewarm. Verse 18. So I advise you to buy gold from me, gold that's been purified by fire. Then you will be rich. Also buy white garments from me, so you'll not be ashamed by your nakedness, and ointment for your eyes, so that you'll be able to see. Now think about that. Jesus just told these believers who thought they were rich, but he said, you are poor. And now he's telling these poor people to buy from him gold and garments and eye treatments. How are we supposed to understand that? Well, if we kind of isolate each of those things, first of all, the gold, when Jesus says, buy gold from me, what he's saying is the precious things of life, you need to look to me. Remember, he's our source. And so no matter how much cash you have, you can't buy peace. You can't buy grace. You have to get that from God. He says also the white garments, buy white garments, white being a symbol of purity and integrity. He says you need a covering for your guilt and your shame. And you're going to have to get that from me. You, no matter how many assets you have, you can't buy right alignment with God. That's got to come from me. And eye treatments. No matter how soothing that the salve is that you produce for eyes, it will never open up your spiritual eyes so you can see and know the presence of God and understand his ways. If that's going to happen for you, if you're going to be able to sense God's presence and know God's ways and follow the Lord, then you're going to need your spiritual eyesight open, and you've got to get that from me. What Jesus is saying is we don't purchase any of those things. How we buy those things is we humble ourselves to receive them freely from God, because he's our source. And so for whatever we need, Jesus is sufficient. Verse 19, I correct and discipline everyone I love. Anybody ever been spanked by the Lord? Be thankful, because that means you belong to him, right? I discipline the people that I love. So be diligent and turn from your indifference. Verse 20, look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in. I will share a meal together as friends. Now, this passage, verse 20, is often used in the context of evangelism. Sharing with someone, you need to open your heart to the Lord so that Jesus can come in and save you. I don't think that there's anything wrong with making that kind of application from this verse, but do bear in mind it was written to address the condition of lukewarm Christians. That Jesus is saying, you have boxed me out of your heart. And you're going to have to open up your heart to me. Because lukewarmness is a condition that we are going to have to change from the inside out. This message, I thought a lot about it. I really prayed, Jesus, just give us the quick pill that we can hand to every person as they exit today, and they can take the quick pill to just get over their lukewarmness. And unfortunately, there ain't one. It is a work that Jesus has to do. Listen, from the inside out, not the outside in. And when we're lukewarm, we're just mediocre, we're complacent, we're all talk, no action. We've got to open our heart again to Jesus And here's the great news. If we do, I'm telling you, he can come in and start to reorder things and refire things and fix things. And Jesus can deal with this, but it's an inside out kind of thing. It made me think when I was studying this passage this week of one of my favorite TV shows, which is called The Prophet. Has anybody ever seen this show? Two of us. Okay, great. It's spelled with an I, P-R-O-F-I-T, The Prophet. And it's all about a guy who uses his business expertise to come alongside failing businesses and teach them how they can succeed. And so the show every week is taking a failed business, and he will approach them and say, I can help you, but you're going to have to open the door of your business and let me in. If you do, I'll use my money, I'll use my expertise, I'll use my experience, and we'll turn this thing around, but you're going to have to open up to me. Now, here's a little kind of 1 minute explanation of the show, and then I want to make some comments about Jesus and how Jesus wants to be our prophet. Watch this.
Across this country, small businesses are closing their doors, killing dreams, and costing tens of thousands of jobs.
How are you? I'm Marcus.
I'm here to fix this business.
This has been the worst it's ever been financially.
If you want people to listen, you put money on the table.
I'm going to write you a check for $900,000.
My offer is $300,000.
$1 million.
I'll work by their side. I'll put in the hours
because I have the same risk that they do.
I take money very seriously.
I'm there to lead, but if they don't follow,
this business doesn't make it.
Do you understand that the bank could literally show up here today and lock the doors? You're bankrupt.
I'll make the tough decisions they won't.
You are no longer the general manager.
In addition,
you have to take a pay cut.
Anything to turn these unsuccessful businesses around.
You look like you haven't slept in days.
I'm a little stressed out, I am.
And if they can't cut it,
I'm gonna stop you in your tracks every time.
The deal's off.
I don't know if I can do a deal with you guys.
You guys can't even have a conversation.
But if they get with the program,
you either trust me or you don't.
I'll teach them how to succeed.
I'm rescuing the American dream. One business at a time.
Thank you. We have a lot of work. Let's get to work.
So the prophet, if the door is open, they welcome him in. He can come in, and he really can. It's amazing. It's a fun show to watch, that just the turnaround that can result from his influence. But he has to work from the inside out. The business has to open their door to him. A lot of us feel in a moment like this, like the Holy Spirit has just kind of been putting his finger in our chest and saying, you know what, when it comes to lukewarm, mediocre, complacent, all talk, no walk, it sounds a little like you. We can feel conviction. God's talking to me. When you feel that conviction, you either open the door to let Jesus come in and do that work that he wants to do. Remember, this is written to Christians. You can close Jesus, if you will, out of your heart. I'll do this on my own. Or we open the heart to Jesus and welcome him to do the things that he can do. And if Marcus Lemonis is a miracle worker in business, he ain't nothing compared to what Jesus can do in your heart. But we have to open the door to him. He finishes with this encouragement. Those who are victorious, those who have persisted in opening the door of their heart, they keep their heart open, they will sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat with my Father on his throne. Think about that incredible turnaround. It goes from spit to sit. That's a big term. Verse 22. Anyone with ears to hear must listen to the Spirit and understand what he's saying to the churches. So let's ask ourselves the question. Am I lukewarm? Am I settled? Am I satisfied? Am I middle of the road? Am I complacent? Am I all hat, no cattle? There are different types of lukewarm expression in terms of Christianity. It doesn't all look the same. It can be that it is a talk but no walk believer. That might be you. You might be saying, man, I've been a lot of enthusiasm and no obedience. That just feels like me. It could be that you're a sleepy believer. Just kind of almost like sleepwalking through your faith life. Not the passion isn't there. You're just kind of going through the motions. It could be you're a hard-hearted believer. Listen, life has lots of turns and twists and difficult moments, and it can leave us hard-hearted. And sometimes we are lukewarm because our heart's hard. Sometimes it's because we're an immature believer. We know Jesus, but we just haven't grown in our faith. And so we're stagnant. It could be because we're a fence-riding believer. We don't want to offend anybody. I want everybody to like me. It could even be that we're an unconverted believer. What's that? An unconverted believer. Did you know you can believe and not be saved? You can believe and not be converted. You can believe the facts of the gospel. You can know them. You know that Jesus died. You know that Jesus was raised from the dead. You know that Jesus can forgive. You can know the facts of faith, but not be converted. James chapter 2, verse 19. You say you have faith, for you believe that there is one God. Good for you. Even the demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. How many demons do you expect to see in heaven? But they believe. Some of us may have a head knowledge, but not the heart knowledge of the Lord. Are we lukewarm Christians? Well, if we are, what's our call to action? Three things that Jesus mentions in this passage. Number one is deliberately turn from your indifference. Just make a decisive shift. If you feel called out by God today, the response is just to go, God, you're right. Confession means to say the same thing, to agree with God. And so one way to respond to feeling called out for indifference is agree with God and just make a deliberate shift. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and so I'm going to turn from that. I'm going to turn from my indifference. Secondly, there needs to be a fresh invite for Jesus to take his place in our hearts. Remember, that's written to believers. When's the last time as a believer that you just said, Jesus, come on, fill my heart? New spaces, new places, nothing off limits. Where do you want to go in my heart? Invite you in. And then third, renew connection with Jesus. Jesus said, I'll come in and we'll have a meal together. This is mealtime, Jesus. This is sit down, take a while, Jesus. In the ancient culture, meals were like events. They didn't just show up and have a quick bite. They sat down and they were stretched out over a long period of time. My wife and I went to Italy a few years ago and we had one sit down meal because it took 4 hours. 4 hours. I love her, but we ran out of words after about 30 minutes. And we ate on the streets for every meal after. We weren't going back through that. Again, Jesus said, listen, this is a sit-down kind of meal. It's a connection, right? I want you to renew that connection with me. In another place, Jesus used a different word, and there's something about this word that it just connects in a way that you kind of almost know what it means before it gets explained. In John 15, Jesus chose this word to explain this renewed connection. He called it abide. Abide. In John 15, we're going to read this passage. Count the number of times Jesus says the word abide. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit and prove you are my disciples. How many times did Jesus say abide? Seven. It's a lot of times to say abide in a short conversation. But we do start to get a clear sense. This is what he's after. And abiding is connecting. And sometimes to connect, you've got to do things like you read your Bible again. You know, be in a small group, be in a church service. You find ways to connect. There's also a sense whenever we are connecting and abiding with Jesus, we're depending on him. Listen, life is easy. We're self-independent kind of people, and it's easy for us to unplug from Jesus. There's something about abiding in Jesus. I remember a few years ago being in Africa, and somebody said something about having a headache. And somebody was just reaching in their pocket to get an aspirin, and the rest of the church was gathering around that person and praying for them. And I thought, I would have just gotten the aspirin and never even thought to pray, because that's the way we live. We're almost trained not to depend on God instead of depending on God. So to abide, we connect, we depend, we continue. That's not sexy, but that's abiding. We continue. Oh, we have our ups and downs. We go forward, we fall back. But in the end, we continue. Abide in Jesus. Lukewarm, not our place. Our place is to be all in for Jesus.